very merry and birthday to me.
To who?
To me.
Oh, you.
A very merry and birthday to you.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Oh, me.
Let's all congratulate us with another cup of tea. A very merry and a birthday.
Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we're going to talk about some Disney things. Specifically this week, we're going to be talking about Alice in Wonderland.
Yay!
Which I think is somebody's favorite movie.
It is indeed.
Definitely. All right.
One of my top five Disney.
Yeah. Because yep. I guess a number one movie rotates a bit.
Yeah. You can't just choose one. That's painful and terrible.
Oh, I know. So, Alice in Wonderland came out July 29th, 1951.
Yep.
It was the first movie of the whole of the Walt Disney movies to credit people at the end of the movie, to credit character voices.
I noticed that. Yeah.
And so, I'm wondering if having Ed Wynn was part of that.
I don't know.
Since it was, you know, a rather distinguishable voice.
Yeah, I did notice him.
Yeah, so.
In the opening credits, I also noticed that Thor was still here.
Thor was still there?
I'm going to be so sad when Thor leaves. I'm gonna have to go investigate the life of Thor and see, like, what he did, and when he left Disney, and that sort of thing, eventually.
Yeah. I don't know. Bill Pete was in there. I saw Bill Pete's name.
I did, too. I saw the little clump of nine old men. I was like, oh.
Yep. Well, so, I hadn't seen Alice in years.
And Mary Blair was not just listed as a colorist now. She was listed as a color and stylist. So I guess that's something.
Baby steps.
It still seems like such a sad little footnote for, like, the large impact she had on these movies visually. Like, it seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
But at least she wasn't just a colorist now.
Yeah. I'm telling you, a little bit at a time. She'll be running the company by Lion King.
I think she was dead by Lion King.
Or dead. One of the two. So, yeah, I hadn't seen Alice in Wonderland since a long time ago.
I'm not
sure how long time ago, but it must have been a long time because I remember almost none of this movie.
No. I had seen it fairly recently. Well, I'm really familiar with the books.
Yeah.
And this is definitely one of my favorites. So I've seen it fairly recently and I'm very, very familiar with the story, so.
Yeah. Well, like I didn't realize how unfamiliar I was with it because I thought I remembered a lot of it, but there's so much of it I didn't remember at all.
Yeah, there's always little parts that I'm like, I totally forgot that was there, or like the order shifts in my head. Especially because it is such a, like, you know, segmented movie. It's easy to miss things.
Yeah. And so the thing is, like, I completely remember an entire segment or don't remember it at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, I really remember the flowers and I remember that whole thing. And then there's, you know, like, the Look a Monster segment.
Serpent.
I was like, this might as well have been a deleted scene for all I remember it.
I remember that really well.
Before we get into the movie, I wanted to talk about the making of this movie because it's got, like, one of the most interesting backstories and production stories of anything we've done so far.
Yep.
Because, like, Walt Disney's wanted to make an Alice in Wonderland movie for years.
Forever.
Like this was his biggest passion project. 'Cause he started with, in 1923 when he was making Laugh-O-Grams. Mm-hmm. So pre-Mickey Mouse, he was making these Alice shorts.
Yeah, I've seen some of those.
It was a live action girl and a cartoon backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really his first success. It was back when he was working with Roy in the Disney Brothers studio.
Aww.
Before it was the Disney studio.
That's cute.
So, and you know, he always wanted to make a feature-length version. It was going to be his big one before Snow White. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be, originally was going to be a mix of live action and animation. Hmm. The way the comedies were and the way, you know, some other movies around that time were.
Right.
But it was a lot of, there was a lot of starting and stopping because, yeah, it was kind of in production since the 30s, so.
Yeah.
Or in pre-production, at least.
Long time coming.
Yeah, so there's a lot of variations, you know. There's reports of, there's, you know, versions out there that Ginger Rogers was going to be Alice.
That's odd.
Yeah, the little girl from Song of the South was going to be Alice in a live-action version for a while.
Hmm.
I don't remember her name.
I don't either.
Let's see. It's Luna Patton.
Oh.
Alice in Wonderland, the movie we've seen, finally came out. And it didn't really make its money. So, it was a flop at the box office, which always happens to poor Walt.
Yep. Every time, pretty much.
He makes a giant, huge, career-defining success. And then, flop.
Which is why it frustrates me so much that Disney, as a market, tends to ignore the movies that didn't do well, because so many of their original movies that didn't do well are now seen as classics today.
Yeah.
So, it's just kind of weird how they just, like, ignore movies that didn't do well, when, in fact, movies that didn't do well make up a lot of their target market.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, if you can have a cult Disney movie, Alice in Wonderland's probably near the top of that list.
Yeah.
Because you have passionate fans about it. You know, it started to get its kind of, you know, success in the 60s. Yeah. When it was, you know, along with Fantasia, when it was kind of a drug movie.
Man, I'm tired of that argument.
But, you know, Disney would often re-release their movies in the theaters, and so because Alice was a flop, they didn't re-release it for a long, long time until it became their most requested film rental, their 16mm film rental.
Yeah.
Usually for college screenings. So it took until 1974 for it to be re-released into the theaters, which is, I think, the longest one of these movies.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, like something 20 plus years. But it's, yeah, it's now, it's a big classic movie.
Yep.
So let's jump in and talk about some Alice in Wonderland.
So it opens up with her sister reading a book to her, and that girl is terrible at reading books. Like, that book doesn't even sound that uninteresting. Like, it's a history book, but it sounds, you know, there's like battles in it and stuff, but she just reads it like it is the most boring thing in the universe. So, like, it's perfectly understandable why Alice is not paying attention when you're droning on and on. But
I've read in places that the book she's reading is the history of William the First.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know enough about William the First to be able to take this small snippet that she read and pinpoint it down. But I guess that's where we're going, William the First.
Yep.
And so, yeah, Alice is super bored of this.
She makes a snide remark about a book with their pictures in it. She's like, how can I pay attention to a book if it doesn't have any pictures in it? And I'm like, Alice, how would it matter if there were pictures in it if she was reading it aloud where you couldn't see her? I don't understand your reasoning here.
I think it's really funny that our main character that we're supposed to cheer for says that, and then years later that exact same thing is used to show how stupid the antagonist is in Beauty and the Beast.
Yep. Well, I mean, in Alice's defense, she is supposed to be, like,
10. Yeah, Alice is a 10-year-old girl, and Gaston is a 24-year-old man.
But books with pictures in them are, by and large, awesome. So I can't really say that I disagree.
So Alice starts talking to her cat.
Dinah.
Yes.
I think it's kind of interesting that they made Dinah orange. And this is going to sound, like, really dorky, but I believe in the book she was gray. Because I remember, in Through the Looking Glass, her kittens, Dinah's kittens, were, like, black and white.
Yeah.
And I remember them all being, like, you know, monotone cats. So I found it weird that they were like, orange cat. Orange cat sounds good. That was kind of a random twist. She's really cute, though. She looks kind of like Oliver from Oliver and Company.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, tiny little orange thing.
Yeah, now that you've said, it's a tiny little orange cat. Cat's kind of...
Yeah, there's only so much you can do with a cat.
Look like a cat, but...
they look like they're about the same size.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Alice sings this song.
World of My Own.
Yeah, I don't remember any of this.
No, I really like this little song. It's really cute. I really like all the songs from this movie, actually. I forgot how many songs there were.
There's so many songs in this movie.
Pretty much every scene has some sort of little song to it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not like a full song, they'll have little snippets.
Well, you know, that's because Lewis Carroll wrote so many poems.
Yeah. And a lot of these is full of poems. It's like Lord of the Rings, like how there's a story and then like random poems that they sing or whatever.
Well, a lot of these songs are just his poems set to music.
Yeah.
But all I remember is Unbirthday.
Yeah.
And I'm Late. I remember Unbirthday and I'm Late.
Yeah.
And so every other song, I'm like, oh, look at that.
There's a song here. I really like this little song.
Yeah.
And I like my favorite part of this animation. Well, okay, first of all, I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not spoiling it for anybody. Everybody knows that this ends with a dream. She's been having a dream, but I'm not sure where her dream starts. Because she definitely just, like, wanders off from her sister, and her sister doesn't say anything. So I guess it starts when she's singing to Dinah. I guess it starts when she starts singing this song.
Yeah.
Because she just, like, aimlessly putters off, and we're like, Alice, where are you going? What are you doing? Weren't you supposed to be paying attention? Where is your sister? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the movie, we see her, you know, sitting against a tree.
Yeah.
And so I guess she never left that tree. Still,
yeah, in the tree.
Although I'm glad she got down from the branch before she fell asleep.
I agree. That was probably a good decision.
Maybe the falling down the rabbit hole simulates the falling out of a tree.
I think she would have noticed.
She's just a really heavy sleeper.
I think she would have woken up for that. That would have been a little odd. We get
but
the
wait, hang on.
What?
So you wanna talk about spoiling the end of the movie? So the little chorus song that opens up the movie while the credits are going says it's a dream.
And so does it? I didn't even notice that. That's so funny.
Yeah, they're like, "How do you get to Wonderland? You can go over the hills, or it can just be once upon a dream." And I was like, "Well, movie's over.
We're all done.
I know how it ends."
Okay. That's so funny. I never noticed. Well, I guess, you know, Alice is a pretty common children's story, so a lot of people going to see it would have known the ending anyway, but
yeah,
that is kind of a stupid decision.
So,
But,
yeah, so the white rabbit comes in.
Yep. And he's late.
Yep.
He's always late.
That's his entire character motivation.
I know, so sad. He's such a cute little rabbit. I'm sure he has lots of hopes and dreams, and that's all we get.
Nope, he's late.
So she goes running after him on a little path, and then she falls down the rabbit hole.
Obviously. Falls down the rabbit hole.
So that's what
That's the first image I remember in this movie.
Yeah, that's a really commonly portrayed scene, and that's like a really iconic scene from this movie. Her falling. I love how she just... Well, I love the little moment where she starts to fall down the hole, and Dinah waves goodbye to her.
Yep.
She doesn't go after her. She doesn't seem too upset about it. She's like, okay, bye, Alice. It's very nice to see you. And I love that Alice's petticoat makes her float.
Yep.
I wish that were true in real life. That was really cool. Like a little umbrella, Mary Poppins style, floating. And she floats down, and there's, it's like a living room almost, the tunnel.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pieces of furniture and fireplaces. And
There's a little rocking chair that she falls into and then falls out of. There's books and, yeah, like a fireplace and that sort of thing. It looks very homey, which is, you know, weird for a tunnel.
Well, I assumed it was the rabbit's home.
I guess so, but how would the rabbit get up there? He just has an
incredibly vertical home.
But it's not the rabbit's home, because we see the rabbit's house.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. All right, I have no idea what it is.
I don't know. I don't know, it's nonsense, who cares? That's what every explanation can be in this podcast. Like, whatever, doesn't matter, it's supposed to be weird.
And so we get to the bottom, and we meet the doorknob. We're chasing the rabbit and meet the doorknob.
The doorknob, yes. I like the doorknob. He's a cute little character.
I like the doorknob. I think he's not in the books. I think he's the only character in here that's not in the books.
I'm trying to remember. I think he is in the books, actually. I don't know that he's characterized as such, but there's definitely, like, a conversation she has with a doorknob, I think.
Are you sure? Because she does a lot of talking to herself in the book.
She does do a whole lot of talking to herself. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I do like the little doorknob. And she goes through the whole eat the cookie, makes you smaller. And then she can't get to the key, which is on top of the table, now that she shrunk.
Yep.
This whole movie and the whole book, all I want to do is be like, Alice, can we please have a conversation about strange foods? Because she, like, she realizes, at least after this scene, that eating things in this world will do strange things to her. It'll make her shrink or it'll make her bigger. Yeah. But she continues to eat random crap. And I'm like, Alice, why was this a good plan every single time? She's very gullible.
Well, I remember in the book, it's one of the biggest, like, memories of reading the book as a kid, mm-hmm. where she goes, I better check to make sure it's not poison.
One must always check. Yeah, she's got this cute little line around checking for poison. It's something like, She's like turning it over, and the doorknob's like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, one must never drink too much from a bottle marked poison, or one might be sick. And I'm like, well, you got that part, I guess.
But I mean, I guess since there's not a blatant skull and crossbones plastered on the bottle.
Yep.
It's good to go.
So once she's small enough to get through the door is like, yeah, you need a key.
The key's way up there.
Sorry. And there's this nice little impossible impassable joke there.
Yep.
How nothing is impossible. It's simply impassable. I really like that. And so
The cookies appear and she gets crazy big again.
Yep. Then she gets too big.
Yep. And has to cry about it.
She cries a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a 10-year-old out of her element, so I guess that kind of makes sense. But
yeah, I mean,
she does get upset pretty easily.
I would be probably pretty ready to cry at this point already. She cries an ocean.
She does, and she finds a little bottle.
Makes her shrink again.
Yeah, but then she gets stuck in the bottle. And then she floats through the door. So, like, she didn't need the key at all. That wasn't very... really very useful.
Oh yeah, she floats through the keyhole.
Yep. And then it's the caucus race. I always forget about the caucus race.
I forgot all. I have no memory of it.
And I really love this little bit of animation because the fish just look so derpy. They just look so funny. Something about their little faces is just so funny to me.
Dodo was so entertaining in this part.
He looks like George Washington today. Every time I see him, I'm like, it's George Washington as a dodo.
He reminded me of Sam the Eagle.
I did totally see that, yes.
Because he's really proper and...
He's got the little wig and the hat and the waistcoat. Yeah.
Except for being really British, I guess.
He was British. He's Sam the Eagle's British cousin.
Yes.
Basically. So the caucus race is essentially the dodo standing on a rock with a little fire warming himself, instructing all of the other animals to run around the rock in a circle so that they'll get dry. But the ocean keeps coming in, so it's really not doing anybody any good. And I love this little bit of animation. The people who are running the Gaga's race are the derpy fish, some really funny looking starfish. I love the starfish. It's so funny to see them like running on their little legs.
The pelican looking thing.
There's a toucan of some sort, because Alice gets stuck on its bill. I'm like, what? What's happening here? And like a random assortment of other birds.
Yeah.
And it's so goofy.
And the rabbit runs by and Alice can't chase after him because she's stuck.
She's too busy running in the caucus race. It's very distracting.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so out of control. And so much of this movie is just out of control things being out of control.
Basically, yes. And just like, it's funny because Alice seems to think of them more as odd cultural practices than anything else. Like, oh, I have to do this because these people are doing this. And I want to be polite sort of thing. Which is really funny to me, just that's how she thinks of them. Not like, what is this stupid crap? What am I doing? I don't understand. She's like, oh, of course. This is how they do things here.
Yep.
The rabbit comes running out. The rabbit has an umbrella. Where did this umbrella come from? I love that.
Maybe he grabbed it on the way down the rabbit hole.
Oh, that's true. There might have been umbrellas there. Although I did not see him carrying an umbrella earlier.
I mean, I don't know if it was thought out. I'm just...
It just seems very funny. And then Alice finally manages to break free and run after him. And my favorite thing is there's a little line there from the dodo. And he says, watch it there. Stop kicking that mackerel. They never noticed her before, and it made me laugh.
Yeah.
Next is the Tweedles.
Yes.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Tweedledee, Tweedledum. Who are also quite ridiculous.
And they sing a little song called How Do You Do and Shake Hands.
How Do You Shake Hands.
I love that so much.
My friend sang this in high school. Like, not on a regular basis, just one time. And so I was like, that's a charming little song you just made up all by yourself.
No.
And so now I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
You're on to him. Yeah. They recite, or they sing, rather, the Walrus and the Carpenter.
Walrus and the Carpenter.
This song, or this poem, rather, always reminds me of Dogma Now.
I know, right?
Kevin Smith movie, and I'm always like, is this really about religion? Every time I watch it, I'm like,
Well, it's really interesting it made it into the movie because there's nothing about Alice in it. There's no other characters in it.
It's really, like, not necessary. It is in the original Alice in Wonderland, I believe.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember if it was in that or Looking Glass. I think it's Alice.
Yeah, but I mean, so is, like, the Jabberwocky poem and stuff.
Yeah, well, the Jabberwocky does make it partially into here. We'll talk about that later, I guess. But... Yes, it is kind of a random choice, but I think it was an easy way for them to incorporate Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah.
And I think they really wanted to keep them in as characters, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the movie's not long as it is, so right. It's not like these 5 minutes are really pushing anything.
Yeah.
And it was a nice little song and story.
Yes.
Because...
The Walrus and the Carpenter is just this little story about a walrus and his friend who's a carpenter, and they trick some oysters into being eaten. That's really what happens. And I really love, the only thing I ever really remember about this, like I know the poem pretty well, but the thing I remember most about the Disney version is the little oysters sing, feed! That's always my favorite. Just somehow the way they say it in unison is really, really cute. And really depressing, because you know they get eaten, but
yeah.
I just really like that.
Oh, so it's also, it's a really depressing
it's not happy,
story. No. The one thing I really remember about it is the mama oyster, you know, the walrus goes down and says, all you oysters, come up and walk with us. And so all the baby oysters are like, oh, let's do that. But mama oyster's like, no, we shouldn't do that.
Yep.
And her reasoning is because this... The R on her calendar got really big, and I never knew what that was about. So I looked it up after watching it. It's because in England you weren't supposed to eat oysters in months that didn't have an R in them. Because June, July, August are too hot and the oysters will go bad.
Oh.
So if there's an R in the month, it's okay to eat oysters.
So did the walrus and the carpenter eventually die?
because there is an R in the month. There's an R in the month of March, so it's okay to eat
oysters. It's okay to eat oysters, so she doesn't want to leave because they'll eat them. Okay.
Yes.
But if they had invited them for a walk in August, it would have been okay.
Yeah, mom would have been like, let's go. But what's also, this is totally, I'm sure, a random coincidence, but just really kind of interesting. That calendar, that March, the way the days lined up are the same way the days lined up in March 2010, and that's when the new Alice in Wonderland movie came out.
Weird. That's a cool little coincidence.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't planned at all.
But it's a nice little coincidence, and Walrus and the Carpenter wasn't in the new version at all. And we're not going to talk about the new version, because I'll just get angry. But that is kind of neat, timing-wise.
So, just happened to work out like that. But that's the story ends with all these baby oysters dead.
Yep. The walrus is eating them. The carpenter didn't get any.
The carpenter didn't get any, so he chases the walrus around with his hammer.
And the Tweedles afterwards, Alice is like, that was a really sad story. And they were like, we're going to recite your old Father William now. Just randomly like, okay. She's like, that's nice. And then she wanders off. They don't even notice.
I'm bummed about, because I like your old Father William.
Yes.
So I was like, well, stay. I want to hear the poem, Alice.
Jeez, Alice.
But she did not. And we were forced to go with her.
So disappointing. I'm kind of glad they didn't include your old Father William, because as much as I like it, it is a really long poem. So, that would have taken up a lot of time. Alice runs to the rabbit's house. She goes to the rabbit's house. Which, by the way, is like the cutest house in the world. It's all pink, and everything inside is shaped like a rabbit. He's got a little rabbit clock. And a little rabbit rocking chair, and everything is shaped like a bunny, and it is the cutest thing. And you can tell that the rabbit clearly has further hopes and dreams, because he's got a little family portrait in his hall, so he's clearly, like, a very interesting character, but all we get is late.
Well-rounded character.
Yep, late.
Who's also late.
Who is really, really late, and very panicked about it. He thinks that she is his maid, I think. He calls her Marianne. And he asks her to go get his gloves.
Yeah.
And she runs in the house, and she eats something.
Yeah, and she sees some cookies. I'm like, oh, don't do it.
Alice.
Oh.
Jeez.
She eats the cookies.
Yeah. I hope those cookies at least taste really friggin' good, because otherwise, this is really dumb.
They're unending problems.
So she gets really big. And she, you know, her arms grow out of the house, and she's all smushed up, and it's really funny looking. And the rabbit calls for help, but he calls for help in, like, a super polite, adorable way. I just remember him saying, like, help, help, assistance. Like, oh, that's cute. And Bill the lizard wanders by.
Well, first off, the dodo comes by.
The dodo does come by. And then they find Bill. So
the dodo's like, we need help, a lizard and a ladder.
And Bill wanders by a lizard with a ladder. Bill reminds me a lot of Bert from Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
He's got that same sort of terrible British accent and chimney sweep.
Bill was my favorite in the book.
Yeah. I do because like he was, the book.
He was in the jury box.
Yes, he was.
And I remember Alice steals his pencil in the book. And so there's this little line where it's like, so Bill was resigned to writing the rest with his finger, which did little to help because it left no mark.
Awesome.
And so that's my favorite part about Bill, but so he doesn't do that in the movie.
No, they get Bill to go in, and he goes down the chimney, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but he ends up flying out the chimney.
Yes.
Up into space somewhere. So it's safe to assume that Bill is dead.
Which is nice. There's a lot of death in this movie.
Yeah, I don't think lizards land on their feet like cats do. So, yeah, Bill is dead.
Cartoons do.
Death toll raised to two. Well, I guess we count all the oysters as one. They're little oysters. We can count them as one. So they try all sorts of methods to get her out.
The dodo's final solution is we'll just burn her out.
And the rabbit's like, I don't want to burn my house down. And the dodo smashes all of his cute bunny furniture to make kindling. Alice figures out that the best way to fix things would be to eat something. So she tries to grab a carrot from the garden, and the rabbit tries to take the carrot from her. She just, like, grabs it anyway and takes a chunk out of it.
Because she's a giant. Down to size. She's way too low.
Yeah.
Because she's now 3 inches and having to walk around in the garden.
I love that she's 3 inches tall, when in fact Alice was British, so it has been centimeters.
Maybe. I guess. Wasn't she 3 inches in the book?
I think she might have been, yeah.
Did I read an Americanized book?
I don't think so. Like, I know that Lewis Carroll was a professor of mathematics. Yeah. So he would know measurement-wise what he's talking about, supposedly. But I just thought it was odd that it was inches. So she's tiny now.
Yep.
And we get the scene with the flowers.
The flowers. This is the song that I remember taking forever, because apparently there was, like, one in every Disney movie to me as a kid.
The song is like 2 minutes long, y'all.
I know. But I was like, oh no, this 9-hour song.
This is probably my favorite character design from this movie, because all the little flowers are just so clever and cute. There's the little bread of butterflies that all, like, fly in together and perch and look like a little loaf of bread.
Yep.
And there's little rocking horse flies. And there's a bunch of different kinds of flowers. The main flower is a red rose.
Well, all the flowers, I liked all the flowers so much more in this go-round of watching the movie. I was really, really pleased with, like, the designs, and they're very different, and they still all look like flowers, and it looks like a garden.
Yeah, they look really cute. There's a really pompous looking flower that's a, some sort of lily, I guess.
I don't remember what they all are.
There's a bunch of daisies.
Yeah.
There's, violets, little shy violets with little kids' faces. There's dandelions and, tiger lilies. And the song goes through, like, a bunch of them. They're singing this little song. It's called Golden Afternoon, the song is. And Alice sings a little bit of it really poorly, which is really funny.
There's a flower. I don't know what kind of flower it is, but he's playing the drums, and he looks like Animal from the Muppets.
I think he's a dandelion, and yes, he does. they have this little bit in the song about dandelions, like, fraternizing with the tiger lilies, and I'm like, does that make it some sort of liger flower then? Like, they have flower babies, is that a liger lily or something?
A flower ligerlin?
Yes.
As soon as the song's over, they have to question Alice on what sort of flower she is.
And they talk about how her petals are kind of weird and her stems are very strange, and one of them accuses her of being a weed, and so they all freak out. And I'm like, wait a minute, Alice in Wonderland.
And so they're really gossipy flowers. So
they are, but I'm concerned about them being overly angry about weeds, because dandelions are really weeds. In fact, they are not flowers. Yeah. Well, they're flowers, but they're weeds. So the fact that they're really comfortable enough that the dandelions are there, that there are tons of them everywhere, and then they figure out about Alice is really stupid. that bothered me. So Alice runs off to avoid being
Alice gets washed away.
Oh, yeah, she does. Because one of the flowers tips over a leaf that's full of water onto her, and she gets washed away. And then we come across the caterpillar for the first time. He comes back a little bit later.
Singing A-E-I-O-U, I guess.
Yes. I guess that's the name of the song. Well, the weird thing about this movie is that it's got a lot of these little songs in it, but it's very rare that I can find them, like, as songs recorded for, like, a soundtrack.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of strange. But, A-E-I-O-U is a song. He's singing vowels. I don't know why. Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're coming out of his smoke.
Yep.
In vowel form. And so a lot of his talking, you know, also comes out. He'll say, "Who are you?" a lot.
Yep.
And it'll just be R and a U flying out of his face.
Yep. I really love the smoke in this scene. And this is often credited as, this is a druggy movie. The scene is the caterpillar scene. He's smoking a hookah.
Yeah.
But, like, I really don't see it that way. If only because it's mostly just him smoking, and he's not doing anything that weird. In comparison to everyone else in this movie, he's pretty normal, to be honest.
Yeah, he's like, the most sane and rational
one. And, like,
he gives the most helpful advice of anybody in this movie.
Yeah, and the smoke is really well animated, and it changes color, and it's really pretty cute. I love that he doesn't have control over all of his hands at once. He's trying to recite, I think it's when he's trying to recite, How Doth the Little Crocodile, and his two of his hands out of, like, eight are gripping the thing, I don't know, the little pipey thing.
The hookah?
Well, it's not the hookah, it's the little cord that comes from it. I don't know what that's called. And he has to, like, swat them away.
I like that he has so many syllables in every word. In Karekatakali.
Yep.
And in Exekatakali.
Yep. It greatly confuses Alice. She's trying to, like, talk again, and she's like, what? What is this word?
And so Alice leaves, and she gets, like, a foot away. Yeah. And the caterpillar's like, wait, come back. I have to tell you something. So I was like, fine. And then it takes her 40 minutes to get back.
It's not 40 minutes. It is much longer than it took her to get out there, though. She gets stuck in a patch of grass or something.
Well, we get, like, cross dissolves, which, like, are to imply that great time has passed.
I guess. And he tells her, you know, well, she gets there, and there's just, like, a pile of stuff. And she's like, what? And then he's a butterfly, he yells at her, like, you know, one side makes you smaller, or one side makes you bigger, the other side makes you smaller.
Bigger one side makes you smaller.
And,
what?
Like, what? And he's like, the mushroom! Like, you're so dumb, Alice, jeez. So she takes a chunk from either side.
Yep. And then takes one little bite of one side and gets giant.
Really,
gets,
really,
like,
huge.
Tree giant.
Then we get angry serpent bird.
We get the angry bird who has obviously never seen a serpent in her entire life.
Alice looks nothing like a snake.
Has no concept of what they might look like or how they might operate.
But I love how she screams. She screams funny. And then she takes a bite from the other side. Makes her tiny again. She's like, well, this is stupid. So she licks the other side of the mushroom. I love that all she had to do is lick it. She's about the right size.
She goes, yeah.
But she puts them in her pockets. Plot point.
Not too many of those in this film.
No, not really. And it's funny because she puts them in her pockets, and then her pockets are never visible, really.
Yeah.
only when super necessary.
So, it's cat time.
Yep. She goes wandering off into the forest. There's trees and stuff. And this is the Jabberwocky that I was mentioning. The Cheshire Cat's little song is the nonsense verse that is both the first and last verse of the Jabberwocky poem.
Yeah.
So we never get to hear the full thing, but he does sing the "'Twas brillig and the slimy toes" thing.
He hints it to it.
Did Garl and Gimble in the Wave, you know.
Yeah.
And there's also actual bone grass in this movie, which I like. I'll talk about those later. But they're really cute. And
I liked the cat. He was fun.
I like the animation they did for the cat. I like his disappearing. I like his little grin. I like when he stands on his head. this is by far the most misquoted line from this movie, though. He's talking about, he's trying to say, you know, you could go visit the Mad Hatter, but, you know, he's mad. And you could go visit the March Hare, but, you know, he's mad, too. And she says, you know, like, I don't want to go among mad people. Mad meaning crazy, not mad meaning angry.
I am stunned this didn't confuse me more as a child.
I know, right? I guess I just knew that the Mad Hatter was crazy, so, like, obviously he's just crazy. And the Cheshire Cat is quoted a lot as saying, we're all mad here, and I think he says that in the book, but in the movie he says, most everyone is mad here. And I'm like, that's weird. I did not remember that line being different, but apparently it is.
Weird.
Yeah, that's strange. But yeah,
there's a tiny little bit in here that's, it's really subtle, but it's the cat turns invisible, and he's walking around Alice, so we just see his footprints. Yeah. But then the footprints split and go around Alice.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit, but it's just like, everything is wonky here. Like, every possible thing is just messed up and crazy.
Yep.
So, there's that, and there's one more moment a little bit further on I'll talk about, but they're like these two really subtle moments that I really liked. And so, but yeah, we decide to go to see the Mad Hatter and the March Hare.
Yep. It's Marianne birthday time.
Yes, it is.
So, there's a couple of little moments that I love most about this scene. I love the Dormouse, who's, like, drunk, pretty much. And Alice is trying to explain where she's come from. And she's like, so I was talking to Dinah, and then I saw this white rabbit. And I'm like, who's Dinah? And she's like, my cat. And the Dormouse freaks out. They have to put jam on his nose to make him calm down. I don't know why that's the trigger. I don't know. I also really like, there's a teapot that Alice is trying to get tea out of, but doesn't have a spout, so the March Hare cracks it open like an egg. Like an egg cup.
So much of this scene is craziness and out of control. This might be one of the most out of control scenes of this movie, but, the other part that I really liked was, when the Mad Hatter takes his hat off. There's a smaller hat and then another smaller hat for the March Hares, so they can all have hats to take off.
Yep.
I really
like when they cut the March Hare wants half a cup, so they cut the teacup in half and pour half a cup, literally.
Yep.
And there's a couple of really famous parts of this scene. One is, how is a raven like a writing desk?
Yeah.
And there's, originally, actually, there was no answer for that riddle. Lewis Carroll wrote it and was like, there's no answer for this. But my favorite supposed answer is that Poe wrote on both.
Yep.
And there's a lot of, like, random answers for that, but yeah.
So you can find a lot of answers with a quick Google search. So, but then the white rabbit comes in, and his watch is 2 years late, exactly.
Supposedly.
And so it's time to
fix it.
This is my favorite scene, and it's because when he opens it up and looks at it, he goes, I know what's wrong. This watch is full of wheels.
And he starts, like, taking everything apart, putting random crap in it. My favorite part of this little part is that he, like, offers him, one of them offers him mustard. And he's like, mustard? Don't let's be silly.
It's this whole build-up, because they're like, here's some bread. Yes, bread needs to go in here. Here, an apple. Apples need to go in here. Yes.
And some, you know, like, all this crap. And he's like, mustard? No, mustard is silly.
Let's not get silly now. But this whole little speech was apparently ad-libbed by Ed Wynn.
Yeah. I had posted about that on the blog.
And so Walt Disney was kind of looking at it, and he's like, oh, this has been recording this whole time. And then he's like, hey, that was pretty good. Can we put that in the movie? And the sound men were like, we can't use that speech. We weren't intentionally recording. There's too many background noises on this tape. And so Walt looks at him and goes, that's your problem. And walks out of the room.
Oh, that's so mean.
Isn't it?
Yes.
And so, but that's the take that we heard. and I didn't hear any background noises, so I guess some poor sound technician worked really, really hard.
I know, that's awful.
So we could get this. So be really appreciative of that mustard joke.
I am super appreciative of that mustard joke.
Somebody slaved away to get it.
Yeah, we kind of skipped over the Happy Up Birthday song. There's a Happy Up Birthday song.
There's obviously. Happy Up Birthday song. It's everybody's on birthday except for some people's.
Except for if it's your birthday.
But it'll be their own birthday tomorrow, so.
Yeah, that's true. Happy Up Birthday, Joel.
Happy Up Birthday.
Thanks. The watch, they close with the watch, and the watch freaks out. And actually, the watch looks pretty threatening. It's kind of scary. It's like snapping at them and stuff.
Yep. So they, that. So
Alice manages to sneak away from all this.
Gets out of there.
And this scene is kind of sad. It's a thoughtful little scene.
Yeah. It's the scene where Alice has been through a lot today.
Yeah, geez. And there's lots of little birds and things in the forest that she comes by that I think are really cute.
There are all these inanimate object birds.
The mirror bird, and the glasses bird, and the umbrella birds.
And the shovel bird.
The shovel bird.
I like the shovel bird, and I like the little pencil bird.
Me too. And this is where we see the mome rats. And they look like little pants. With, like, fluffy, furry tops to them and little eyes. And I love them so much. They're so ridiculous. And she sings another little song. It's just a couple lines, but I really like this little song. And it's about how she gives herself very good advice, but she very seldom follows it. Which I think is something that everyone can relate to.
So she's very sad, and the moon comes up.
Yep, except it's not the moon.
It's not the moon. I think about this scene every time I see a crescent moon now. So this is by default the most memorable scene for me from this movie.
It is
just
really.
because every time I see that crescent moon in real life, I'm like, maybe it's a cat.
I don't think it's a cat, Joel. Sorry to disappoint. But yeah, it's the Cheshire Cat's mouth.
Yeah.
Also, Alice gets to be a Disney princess too, her and Ichabod, because her singing attracts animals as well. So, now that
but
we're
she has sad Disney animals
that's
who
true.
Don't help her.
That's
all
true.
Of the animals hinder her when she sings to them.
That's true. That's kind of sad. Maybe she's a really bad Disney princess. Maybe she's just not very good at it.
She's only 10.
It's true. But the Cheshire Cat tells her that she's, you know, she says, I'm trying to find my way home. And he's like, well, you're not getting anywhere because there are no your ways here. They're only the queen's ways. And she's like, there's a queen. And he's like, duh. And he tells her about different ways to go. And he's like, but if I were you, I would just take the shortcut. And he opens like a little panel on a tree. And it leads her to the queen's grounds.
It leads her to the queen's grounds, but via a labyrinth.
There is a labyrinth, but she does need to get through it pretty quickly.
She's does.
She's good at it. They have that labyrinth, actually, at Disneyland Paris. Which is really cool.
That's cool.
Painting the Rose is Red is next.
Painting the Rose is Red, which is the most earworm song of this whole movie.
It's stuck in my head right now. Yeah.
The whole, I was humming this song just merrily along.
Yep. The cards are not very good painters. They're very sloppy, but there doesn't seem to be any red paint anywhere else but the flowers.
Yep.
So they're pretty impressively sloppy.
The story behind the song is that the queen wanted red roses, and they accidentally planted white roses.
So they have to paint all the roses.
Now they have to paint all the roses. And there's a line in the song that goes, not blue, not green, not aquamarine.
I like that little line. So the queen comes in, and the cards all bow. And the rabbit, you see, has finally made it. And is no longer late. For what he was supposed to do, which was to introduce the queen. My favorite part of this little scene is that he introduces the queen with a lot of fanfare, and then the king is like, him? And he's like, oh, and the king. And there's this one little voice in the background that goes, hooray! I love that so much.
I love the king in this.
Much.
He tries so hard to be important.
He does. He's so cute. He tries so hard.
So every time, because every time the queen declares something, he'll echo it and then be like, by order of the king.
Yep.
The king's making this command. Remember I'm relevant, that time please.
That I was ruling a kingdom and stuff. So this is the first encounter with Alice and the Queen.
Yes.
And she's trying to explain what she's trying to do, trying to get home, but she keeps saying, "I need to find my way home," and everybody keeps getting angry at her. This happens like several times. Like there are no your ways. There are only the Queen's ways.
The Queen is like this hugely drawn character, and you know, big and over the top. And she really reminds me of Stromboli from Pinocchio.
She reminds me of the Trunchbull from Matilda.
From Matilda?
Yeah.
I can see that.
So, somewhere between Stromboli and the Trunchbull, but better dressed.
Yes.
Yeah, she's really over the top and larger than life. There's so a little line here when they're talking. That's really, like, famous, and she says, "Curse me while you think it saves time," which I like immensely. And she decides that what they should do is play croquet.
Yes.
But,
of course, they can't have normal croquet.
They gotta have flamingo and hedgehog croquet.
Animal abuse croquet.
Basically, yes.
Except, hedgehogs don't get hit, so I don't know how much animal abuse there is.
It's true. And the flamingos seem to be immensely enjoying themselves.
Yes. So, but they play, and the queen has everyone cheat for her.
Yeah, I'm about as good as the Queen of Hearts at croquet, which is to say not at all. I don't know if any of you have ever actually tried to play croquet.
Man, I love croquet.
I enjoy it, but I'm
I feel bad all kinds of classy playing croquet.
I know, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing or what you're wearing. If you're playing croquet, you're the classiest person in the world.
Yes.
I
also started to notice that, except for when they all count, all the cards counted off, almost all the cards are aces, twos, and threes.
They are.
So there's really like there's 1-4, and there's 2-5s that I noticed scattered around in the audience during the trial. But other than that, I couldn't find any that weren't aces, twos, or threes.
Easier for the animators, I suppose.
Yeah.
So they play croquet, and like what actually happens is that the Cheshire Cat keeps appearing, and the Queen doesn't see him. And Alice tries to be like, "Your Majesty, there's this cat." And he's like, the Queen's like, "What are you talking about?" But the cat appears, and he manages to trip the Queen.
Yep. And so the Queen is livid.
She's wearing bloomers with hearts on them, though. I thought that was funny.
She's Queen of Hearts.
It's true.
Makes sense.
But that's like, that's comedy essential for all cartoons, is that everybody who has any sort of underwear on that you see has to have hearts on it.
Yep. So she decides off with Alice's head.
Yes. Yeah, so basically all she wants to kill Alice for is tripping her. Okay, that's a good reasoning. The king manages to convince her to have a trial.
Yep.
Because he wants to have a little trial, just a little one.
So she's like, "Well, fine."
So they have a trial, and it's of course like the worst trial
ever. Nonsensical. Because the first thing you do is the sentencing.
Of course. the witnesses they call are people who like were not involved with this at all. Like, the Mad Hatter and the March Hare are both called to stand, and I'm like, they were here, like, half an hour ago. I don't know what you guys are trying to try her for. Alice gets angry.
Well, throughout this whole thing, they realize that it's also the Queen's unbirthday.
Yes.
And so they have to give her a cake. And
yep.
Explodes.
Firework and stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
And also,
every time somebody says something completely irrelevant, the Queen goes, "That's very important."
And makes
all the jury write it down.
Yep. But Alice gets angry and she stuffs her hands in her pockets. She's like, "Oh, right, I got mushroom in my pockets. Look at that plot point." The one plot point in this entire
movie. Here we go, coming back.
So she eats the big one. And she gets really big, and she starts yelling at the queen, and the queen's all scared. And, she doesn't notice that she's shrinking back down.
Well, I'm assuming that she ate both of them.
Oh, I don't know.
Because she couldn't remember which one was the big one.
Oh, so she ate both. So she got really big and then shrunk back down.
Yep.
And then, she runs out because everybody starts attacking her.
Yeah.
And
we get a really kind of trippy chase scene.
Yeah.
That reminded me a little bit of the end of Three Caballeros.
I can see that.
This has gotten out of control.
They briefly revisit a lot of things. The caucus race, the tea party, and the caterpillar comes back. Yeah. And then finally, she wakes up.
Yes. Well, she gets to the door. And she sees herself sleeping, so she's yelling, "Wake up, Alice!"
Yep.
And so she does, because, you know, it's all a dream.
Yep. And that's the end.
Yeah, and it ends right there.
Yep.
Like,
we're done.
She wakes up, and her sister's like, "Come on, it's tea time."
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep.
So, it was fun.
I really like this movie. There's a lot of really, really colorful characters, like, literally and figuratively colorful. and the scenery is really beautiful. Like, the whole feel of the movie is very... colorful and crazy and delightful.
Yeah, it is. So, it was a trippy movie.
it's a weird movie, but I mean the book was weird. So.
I mean, yeah, it's you know, it's not like they're taking great liberties with their source material here.
No, there was you know, parts of this are from Alice and parts are from Through the Looking Glass. And they did, you know, cut out quite a bit from each one because the books are fairly long.
There's a lot of crazy in both books.
But so. I think this was the nicest balancing of the plot that I've seen in a movie because, you know, it's kind of hard to reconcile all of these different things together. And I think they did a really good job of
managing to
include everything.
It really stayed true to... the feel of the book because there really was no overarching plot.
It was
very serialized. It was Alice goes here and there's some crazy people. Then she goes over here and there's some more crazy people. Then she goes here and there's crazy flowers. So it's different, but not really.
not quite. But yeah, so. I really did like it quite a bit.
Yeah. So it was good.
That's Alice. Yay.
And so, next week, we're going to be doing Peter Pan.
Joel's really excited about
Peter Pan. I'm so excited about it.
I'm pretty excited about Peter Pan, too. I haven't seen it in a little while.
Oh, man. I've been holding off on it, because I want to re-experience Peter Pan for the first time.
So, we'll talk to you guys then.
Yep. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Painting the roses red. We're painting the roses red. We dare not stop or waste a drop, so let the paint be spread. We're painting the roses red.